Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation and the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. On our program today, downtown Fresno, the effort to revitalize it, and what role the Fulton Mall will play in the city's future. How do those outside the region view Fresno's efforts to remake its downtown? And a startup business owner tells us why he chose to locate his business on the Fulton Mall. Plus, Nikiko Masumoto talks about her one-woman show, What We Could Carry. But first, at the State of the Downtown breakfast, Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen made it clear that revitalizing downtown Fresno is still one of her top priorities. She renewed her call to open the Fulton Mall to traffic, saying it would be good for business. The keynote speaker and an expert from Denver, Henry Beer, told those in the attendance that other cities that removed their downtown pedestrian mall saw an increase in economic activity. The mayor also announced the creation of a new group called Fresno Citizens for a Strong Economy. This all aimed at building support for a more vibrant downtown. Joining us to discuss the state of downtown Fresno is Craig Sharton, Director of Downtown and Community Revitalization for the City of Fresno. Kate McKnight, Chair of the Downtown Fresno Coalition. She has also been involved in numerous projects promoting downtown Fresno. Also here, Ephraim Boss, owner of Fresno Brewing Company on the Fulton Mall. So we have a great group here this morning. We have assembled with all different varying opinions. So I hope we have a great discussion. We want to get this right once and for all. I think a lot of people like myself, we've been hearing about downtown Fresno and the discussion of what to do and how to revitalize it and how to bring businesses there. Craig, you have also been involved in this process for a long time. Where do you think we are right now in that whole effort and that discussion?
You know, surprisingly, we were at very early stages. People say they've heard about it for years. Fresno hasn't followed the what I would say are the proven steps to revitalization in the past. So we're doing the really boring foundational work of clearing up outdated land use laws left over from the 50s and 60s that have prevented revitalization and investment. And we're just now going out to get investors in our older buildings and maybe some new buildings and some new businesses. And that has to happen before we even try to bring people back downtown.
That's so true when you talk about the fact we are in the very, very early stages. Why has it taken us this long to even get to this point? And like you said, I think that's part of the problem. People have heard about it for so long. They figure
we've been doing it.
We've been doing it. And and the whole thing that you're saying is, no, really, it's just been talk. And people might have, you know, downtown fatigue. I don't know.
Well, and that's unfortunate because we haven't tried it the right way before. So we have to get rid of the fatigue of the past and say, let's do it, follow the steps that 2,000 other cities have followed in the United States, and then watch it unfold just as it has in almost every other place.
But Kate, what has it been like for you as well as being someone who has been involved in the process for a long time?
I'm new to the Downtown Fresno Coalition. I've taken over for my father, who was chair for 11 years, who's understandably tired and wanted to retire. But these issues are very dear to me as someone who grew up in Fresno, spent time in the Fulton Mall as a child all through to my adulthood. But I think we are doing some things right downtown. And Ephraim, you'll hear from me in a minute, and he's doing something right. He's got a hopefully successful business. All of us sitting at this table love that place. what we're doing right. I think I'm going to give some props to the Downtown Fresno Partnership. I'm of a different group, and they represent the business owners, but they've had successful events on the mall that have been bringing thousands of people,
exactly,
including people from North End who often have said they don't come. So the point is, people are coming to the mall. It's how do we sustain that, and what are the things that we could do, the city of Fresno could do, and the citizens of Fresno, to actually promote the mall itself. And let people see that this is something that we can't lose. It makes us distinct and unique. And tearing something out that does do that, I'd like to see other options discussed, because people will come there if they feel safe, if they can park, and if they have something that draws them there. So I just don't think we've spent enough time promoting those things.
Since we're going around the table, Ephraim, let's hear your two cents, okay?
I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't have any long sentimental connection to the mall. I'd love to see it stay. We've seen already, you know, our business grow and thrive as it is, the mall itself. But we definitely want to, you know, see things happen down there anyway.
When you talk about, Kate, I heard you mentioned, you talked about, now you are in fault in support of the Fulton Mall staying open to pedestrian traffic, whereas there's also another school of thought and a move to open it up to traffic.
Correct.
One of the things, and I know, Craig, you support that view, and when we had the consultant come out, Mr. Beer, who was just here for the downtown State of Downtown Breakfast, he also talked about the cities that have opened their mall
To traffic. Right.
They've seen an increase in economic activity. But again, what doesn't it come back to? What do you have there? It's just like you mentioned, when you have activities, people do come, but once that's done, they're gone.
Right.
So it really is, how do you capture that?
Yeah. So just so we're operating off of not our own internal opinions, if you look outside of our area at what has happened, we have a wealth of information now that we didn't have 20 years ago. We had about 200 cities that put in pedestrian malls. We were the second. About 180, 85 of those are gone. So 180, 85 cities have already had the debate and taken them out. We know that 90% of the ones that have traffic returned have had a rebound within the first 4 years. So it actually does play a big role in downtown revitalization. We're very far behind on this debate. I mean, everyone else has had it and they've gotten over it, including Kalamazoo, Michigan, which was the first city in the country. Their city motto was America, Small City. They had a huge debate about this being unique and part of their character, and they took it out. And now Kalamazoo, Michigan, the most expensive retail space is on Main Street. Their downtown lofts, they can't build them fast enough to keep them full, and they're very much in demand. So, you know, it's just been decided everywhere, unless you have a college campus sitting right next to you, the pedestrian malls just haven't worked.
And now what he's saying, when you do look at the research and you look at what other cities have done, that's all been documented that it's true. But Kate, you come at this from a different perspective.
Well, it's true that many of the cities that have kept their malls have some anchoring. They have a university, or they have something large at anchors. It could be, for instance, a medical center, which we'll get to in a minute. We have also nearby streets, though, that are also have vacancies. Van Ness Avenue, for instance. And the cost to our city, to our taxpayers, to remove something, to me, we have not investigated all other options, and that would be maybe there are minor alterations. And I'm speaking now from my own opinion, not necessarily just of the coalition that I represent, but there are many members of this longtime coalition who've looked at perhaps at the North End, at Tuolumne, making a roundabout, making more visibility, working on issues that people complain the most about, which is we don't know where to find our way there, and we don't know how to park. It's too expensive. I'm feeding a meter all day long. A recent garage that was for public parking was taken over by the city for its workers. That was right off of the Merced side. So I think this is not just about my nostalgic, sentimental feelings or my group. There are many ways that would be less expensive that I don't think we have tried. That's everything from the things I'm talking about, improve some outer visibility, signage, parking, promotion, and attitude from our own city. The places where the malls are successful have something else that we don't have. Their mayors tout those malls. They are on, you go to the city government pages of Charlottesville, Virginia, Salem, Massachusetts, Iowa City, and the city governments are also promoting those malls.
But also, I think you would also say, take a look at the malls. What is on the malls? I mean, you have to have something there. Now,
sure.
I know, Ephraim, your business does well.
It does.
But you also look at, you capture, and that's one of the things that we have to talk about when it comes to, you capture a lot of the people who work downtown. And people who work downtown have long complained about, you know, not having anywhere to go.
Yeah. Absolutely. But we're also the only thing open on the mall after 6 o'clock.
Right.
And we get people from Tower, from, you know, the Lofts, North Fresno, that'll still come down. And that's my thing is we need a little more of a cultural shift than anything. You know, a lot of my customers come in on foot and two wheels.
There's free bike parking inside.
Yeah. Indoor bike parking.
And indoor bike parking.
But I think when you look at, you're right, you're looking at your business and a specific clientele. But when you look at, when you take a look at what else is on the Fulton Mall, mm-hmm. like I said, what do you have there that's really going to attract people? I mean, you can talk to people all day long and they will tell you, mm-hmm. well, there's nothing downtown. The other part is there is no parking. And we still have to work on those issues. So how do you address that? We've had this continued debate of on the Fulton Mall, keeping it open, opening to traffic. And it seems like at some point you have to move on it. You can't keep discussing it. Or 10 years from now, we'll kind of still be here.
I know that Craig has a lot of information, and I don't want to jump in. I think it's, you know, obviously we take turns here about, you know, kind of the occupancy rates and looking at issues of building ownership and all the rest of things I think we all are troubled by. We don't want this Downtown Fresno Coalition and lovers of the Fulton Mall in the city would like to see it more vibrant. But I think what it comes down to is a difference of opinion also in what could be on the mall. And the original city plan back in when Victor Gruen came on board in the late 50s, it was never fully realized, and that was to have affordable living on the Fulton Mall and businesses that supported the idea of live, work, and play. And we actually have some businesses down there. They may not be Gaps or Navy, Old Navies, but they are businesses that support a population of Fresno. But I've talked to Ephraim about this, and I think that if you have a row of restaurants, each restaurant does do better. If you have another pub and brewing house, it makes his business actually even more successful. So I think it's looking at as not as a retail center. I think that is a form of nostalgia that is not working, will not work. And having people drive down, they might at first go, God, that's really cool. I'm driving down. Oh, but I can go to XYZ store still at River Park where I live up there. So I think it needs to be looked at as a vibrant nighttime place with performance space, galleries, a little grocery store and housing and more places where people just live and congregate.
I mean, I think many people would agree. It's not just retail that you're talking about that you could put in downtown Fresno. And no, if even on the Fulton Mall, right. If you were to open it to traffic, wouldn't those same let's say businesses that Kate is talking about also still be viable?
Sure. That's what our specific plan is aiming toward, is more of an entertainment center where there's music and outdoor cafes. And when you get enough foot traffic for those kinds of businesses, then retail does start to pop in between and feed off of that foot traffic and add to it. But mostly in downtowns, you see the restaurants starting, the places like Ephraim has. You would love to see a couple of rooftop bars open downtown. You know, that's the kind of vibe that brings people back. And then they want to live near it. And then someone says, I want to open my boutique shop right here because I think the people walking on this sidewalk would buy from me.
But
that's the normal process.
But you're right. But in talking about that, The other aspect of this whole thing is there are not enough e-firms. You have to get people who will either establish or bring their gallery there, bring their shop there, or somebody who's willing to invest in a level that will start making a difference. And so
Absolutely.
The key is what does it take to get the people that we need, the business owners, to say, okay, this is a place that I would like to be.
Yeah, you have to remove as many obstacles as possible for retail to have a chance to take hold and to eventually thrive. And by looking at other cities, we know that that is traffic. I mean, you only have to go to Main Street Visalia or Pulaski or Olive Avenue in the Tower District to see how a normal Main Street works.
And that is true. I mean, just speaking of, I was in Visalia last week. And
zero vacancy in downtown and, Visalia.
The area there, you drive down, I think it's the Main Street, it's open to traffic. Mm. There's also plenty of parking, which is really part of the key. So you have a combination where you can walk. It's open to the extent from one end to the other that you can walk or you can park. So is there some consensus on if that would be a good alternative with the group that you work with, Kate?
Well, I think Craig is forgetting something about Visalia, and Visalia's city plan has always, from centuries now, decades, have kept that downtown as their center, as the heart. We lost that. And every time anybody who talks about Fresno history wants to remind each other about some terrible mistakes I think we've made. We've had uncontrolled growth. We've had uncontrolled retail sprawl and spread. Of course, people are going to then flock to the newest beautiful thing, a Manchester Center or Fresno Fashion Fair and a River Park. So I still will say that, yes, we would like to get people there. I'd love to say, that this would be the panacea, but I think it is just a panacea that's not been really thought through, and that it really be a terrible waste of something that could be promoted and actually give incentives to the building owners. Why not take some of this money that could be raised to help building Fulton Mall return into code, to get up to code, to give them incentives to be pioneers the way Ephraim Boss has been. I think there are many other solutions that just are not being looked at. And now we have a group in Fresno that they're very well-meaning. They're very connected young professionals who have now pinned everything on to having the road go through. The mayor herself has made very many statements, and they brought in Henry Beer to say the same thing. This is the time I think that we still are not, we're just not, I don't think we're being innovative enough.
Well, I mean, we brought in Henry Beer because Henry Beer was involved with designing one of the few pedestrian malls that worked, but he's also helped other cities take theirs out.
But why did it work? Why did it work, Craig? Why does Boulder work?
31,000 college students within a 5-minute walk.
We've got
exactly.
College students riding their bikes down to Fresno Brewing
Company.
Yeah, but
they're
company.
12 miles away. No, so when we talk to the cities that do have them that work, the college campuses other than Santa Monica, the common factor. So if we had UC, had gone under the Fulton Mall like I fought 4 years ago, I don't think we'd be having
UC
this.
Fresno.
I don't think we'd be having this argument. Or if Fresno
maybe
State were
university.
At Manchester, yeah, where it
medical.
Had said.
Yeah,
yeah
medical.
Or a medical school.
What
right.
are, because you mentioned, because there have been, starting in 2010 when they started developing these plans, there has been a lot of discussion on this already. The planning process. You had community involvement. You had a number of people come out and give their opinions. What came out of that and what plans are we now looking at?
So in California, we go through the California Environmental Quality Act. So you have to do an environmental impact report. And the three options that the Citizens Committee, the Stakeholder Committee voted on were in order, taking it out completely was the number one vote getter. The number two vote getter was putting a road in and saving much of the historic character of the mall and having traffic, sort of the hybrid. And then the third vote getter was restoring the mall back to its 1964
status. I don't remember that the
status.
Votes had count, that those were hierarchical. I don't think that's correct, but we don't have numbers in front of us. I don't believe that was true.
But you know, they had the
positive that it was. We have the votes.
I mean, I'm sorry, but the fact is that it has been talked about and it has been studied and recommendations have been
But the IR
been
has
made.
Not been done yet. The review has not been complete.
But, yes. Right, they have to move through the process.
Correct.
But it really does seem, and I'm just saying, it really does seem that the majority of folks are saying, okay, we do need to move forward and open the mall up to traffic. I don't know how you said for yourself as a business owner, you're kind of mixed about that.
I am, absolutely. I think, we have something very unique with the mall. It's almost a green space in downtown. And I think, speaking to parking, we have lots of parking downtown, but people aren't used to A, having to pay for parking, or B, having to walk a block to whatever it is that they're getting to. If you look at when was the last time you parked right in front of whatever it was you were going to at River Park? Never happens. Oh. There are those things. If we can continue to work on showing that there are things in downtown that work, just even in our area, right where we're at, and it looks like that, putting in a road will then further that, great. But if you can also make it work without doing that, or,
accommodation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and there are a lot of things in other malls. I mean, for one, none of them are six or maybe two
or
of them
blocks.
Are six blocks long.
Yeah, the next the longest.
They all have cross streets open so that there is more access than ours.
And that was one of the things that has been recommended, that if you do open it to traffic, you start the process in stages and you evaluate what you do. Mm-hmm. And it is saying to start with opening some of the side streets in a way.
Denver has a bus that goes down. I mean, we could look at electric,
bus
or a tram. There were trams in the 60s. I rode on them.
I remember, I worked downtown for a long time, and I remember having the streetcars and the trams, and we have tried that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So,
but why were those? I don't know the reason why those were taken away. I mean, those could be looked at again as an alternative.
Even the cities that have done some of this trickier stuff, like creating a transit mall, have fought against that. In Sacramento, they had the light rail that went down the K Street Mall, and they're taking that out after. First taking away all of the benches and fountains and all of that stuff and doing the light rail. They tried that. Still at 6 o'clock, it's dead at night because there's no access after they put hundreds of millions of dollars into their revitalization and they're adding traffic back. Santa Cruz has the curved street, and now they're looking at straightening the street out to add more parking. It's just we almost get too tricky with this stuff. I mean, Main Street's developed – with a certain form, a certain building type, the double-loaded corridor where we had retail on both sides, the buildings up above with more people to support the retail down below for longer periods of time. This is something that functions extremely well. And then we tinker with it, and then it doesn't function as well, and businesses start leaving.
How do you, and that's one of the things that has been mentioned by those who've looked at our mall and studied our mall, who really think that, let's say, some of the architecture and the sculptures we have are worth preserving and saving. How do you do that and open it to traffic? How do you go about doing that?
Well, I mean, we're having a debate on a radio show. We spend a lot of our time, the three of us talking about what we really need to get to is the point where we don't have any debate here about the historic importance of the mall.
Right.
Okay.
We don't have any debate that we want to see downtown revitalized.
Right. There's a common ground there. We like you from his business.
So,
we like his place.
So the real growth, I think, hopefully, is getting people – property owners, business owners, people that have an interest in the historic character of the mall to come up with a solution that we can most of us, almost all of us, move forward with, so that it's not the extremes.
Right, but you also talked about the fact that, I mean, you did go through this extensive process mm-hmm. where you had the community in, and they have presented three alternatives.
Right.
So it is a matter of deciding which one of those you're going to choose and move forward.
There have just been several things that have been derailed over a period of time, Juanita. And one, in 2010, around that time period, there was an application to the National Register of Historical Places submitted for the Fulton Mall. And various things happened. And at that point, and this had not come up until that moment, the city then claimed they've gone back and forth on whether they own the Fulton Mall or they don't own the Fulton Mall. So I don't think this path to this kind of consensus is really as easy as it sounds. And also, and the last time this came up for a vote, hordes of people have come. Whenever they think something's going to go away, then you start hearing from people. They start valuing something. So I hate that there is contention about it. I wish we could come up with something. But my feeling here today is that there's a bigger thing happening about downtown, and putting a road through it is not going to save all of downtown. And that's, to me, it's just something that's being sold to people in an unfortunate way. That all of us have really innovative, we have a lot of creative people and part of all of these groups that you've even representing here today. I just feel like we have other issues that are facing the reason why people don't have business or come downtown. I don't think we can pin it all on that there's no road down to Fulton Mall.
But I think, too, when you look at the plans, it's not just about
the road.
I mean, they have very detailed on that, and I really would like to get you all's opinion about. We talk about downtown Fresno opening the Fulton Mall. So much of this, when you look at the economic situation that we are facing in the city of Fresno, mm-hmm. where we can't do much of anything at this point, then how do you move things forward? When you look at the economic reality as far as what the city of Fresno is facing, and could that derail all the efforts to try to move everything forward when it comes to talking about doing something more than just talk about downtown Fresno?
Well, I work on attracting investors to downtown, and I can tell you with clarity that the people that are invested in downtown property want to see the mall opened, and the new people that are coming in and investing are investing with the hope that the mall opens, because they've seen what happens in other cities after traffic is reintroduced. And we're talking about two lanes of traffic, not four like Fulton originally had, with 18-foot wide sidewalks. Very pedestrian friendly, but also with the ability to have on-street parking and access and visibility, which is important to retail businesses, including restaurants, that the property owners are very clear about this because, like I said, many of them have seen this phenomena happen. It's almost the most predictable thing in real estate, is that when you reintroduce traffic to one of these 1960-era pedestrian malls, they bounce back. And we just had a study done, like I said earlier, 90% of them bounce back within the first 4 years. So you don't have to go far. You can talk to someone in Burbank, for example, that took out their mall. And the main developers and businesses there have seen it go from dead at 6 o'clock at night to it's even busy now on Tuesday.
Is the Riverside Mall successful because of UC Riverside? By the way, they call their pedestrian mall Main Street. I mean, we could call it Main Street, you know. And there was a Main Street just a little bit to the east, Van Ness. I think I'll let Ephraim say something here. But
we've kind of dominated the situation. And you are one of really, when you look, the few people who are having success with your business. I know many times working there, I would walk to Fulton Mall and there'd be a restaurant and I'd come back a few months later and that restaurant would be closed.
Yeah.
So you really have to look at what makes something work.
I think our biggest challenge is perception. It really is. People, I get it every time people walk in the door. Oh, this is not what I expected. Or, you know, I come down here and, it's not that bad. I didn't, you know, I've always heard that it's this terrible, scary place to, you know, walk the mall at night or whatever, and it's not. It's just a change in mindset. I think that is really holding things back in downtown more than, you know, whether or not the road goes through the mall or not. It's getting people used to the idea of urban living and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, urban living. There's a way to be it. At a, with an urban park right in the middle.
Okay, yeah. we're going to...
we do have an urban park. It's called Courthouse Park.
Let's don't even get over to the Eaton Plaza situation. We haven't even touched on that. Okay, yeah. So that's another radio show.
We are going to kind of transition from this. But before we go, I really would like to know from you, Craig, and we've talked about all the different things that we're looking at and what could happen. Looking at where we are right now, the planning stages where we are right now, what will be the next step when we talk about really seeing something concrete happen?
Well, we have things happening, you know, right now. It's amazing when I bring people in from out of town and they see the amount of residential that's already been built and that is currently being built and how many people we have living in our downtown. And the projects are all full, and so, I mean, it shows an incredible demand. In fact, it seems like with every project that gets built, the demand increases. So we have a lot of great things going on if we stop and just enjoy the accomplishments. I take people from Fresno through downtown, and they think they're traveling through a different city. I mean, it's really, if you haven't been down Fulton or Broadway,
check it out.
Anytime in the last 5 years, it is a very different place.
It definitely has.
Even
has
just
changed.
In the last year that we've been open is, I mean, it's night and day.
I don't want to make it seem that it's not. It is changing. There are lots of things are happening down there, and a lot of people are involved. And this discussion, of course, will be continued. But I'd like to thank all of you, and I love everybody's varying opinions. Craig Chardon, Director of Downtown and Community Revitalization with the City. Kate McKnight, who is now with the group, the Downtown Fresno Coalition. And also Ephraim Boss, owner of Fresno Brewing Company on the Fulton Mall. And if you haven't been, I've been, then you need to go.
Yes.
And thank you all. Yes, it is. And it's nice to have a place open after 6 o'clock.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Well, also, gourmet food trucks are emerging around the nation, and they are unlike the conventional, you know, soft-shell taco or deli sandwich selling food vendors. Met by many city workers or conference goers, the gourmet mobile food industry has gained momentum in larger cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco, and in the past 7 months has gained steam in Fresno. Valley Public Radio's Ezra Romero has more on the growing trend in the region.
All right, could I please have a beef burrito?
Okay, and that will be $6.
The food truck, once known for dreaded, boring, prepackaged sandwiches or carne asada tacos, has taken a turn for the better. The trucks have gone gourmet. They no longer do boring. In fact, many food trucks across the nation have created infusions of local produce with a unique and somewhat international flair. The evolution of the Roach Coach hit Fresno in 2012 in the form of what locals call cart hop. The traveling band of 6 local gourmet food vendors meet in 3 locations for lunch across Fresno, and plan to open the door even wider to foodies in 2013.
There's a need in the Valley for the food truck movement to catch up with the rest of the state. These things happen all over Sacramento, San Francisco, and L.A. And Fresno is another, it's the state center, and Fresno is the center of the Valley. So naturally, this is the next place for the food truck movement to move towards, and we're just trying to facilitate that.
That was H. Steele, the Cart Hop Project Coordinator for Creative Fresno, a local nonprofit with an aim to foster creative thinking by supporting the arts and embracing innovation in order to transform Fresno into a great place to live, work, and play. Cart Hop began in August of 2012 when local favorite Dusty Buns owners Dustin and Kristen Stewart came up with the idea.
It was actually to bring kind of an awareness of Farm to Fork to Fresno. We were up in San Francisco and working in a few different restaurants that were really proud of doing local and organic. And we thought it was kind of funny that when we'd look at the boxes, all the boxes were coming from Fresno and the surrounding areas. And I grew up here and never really saw a restaurant doing anything that really celebrated the produce of the Valley.
Through Creative Fresno, vendors began to meet at a single location on the Fulton Mall in downtown Fresno. And over the course of several months, the weekly event transpired into a second spot in North Fresno, with eats ranging from the Dusty Bun, tamales, Vietnamese burritos, and personal caramel apple pies. Cart Hop puts a strong emphasis on all things local.
Local eats, local art, local music. So we like to tie all those three things together to really bring about a pride to Fresno and the Valley. That's not currently here, but we're definitely working towards that direction.
Steele says that between key intersections and local fair, the multi-day weekly event is becoming tremendously popular. In late January, the regional endeavor added another stop in downtown, this time by the Water Tower at Eaton Plaza. David Peters, a Fresno City college student and a Cart Hop first-timer, says he thinks the idea behind food trucks will bring about necessary conversation for revitalizing the region.
It fosters a sense of community, and hopefully if people keep on showing up, that real community will happen. And I think one of the best places to really get to know people is over food.
Steele says the vision behind Cart Hop is part foodie, with an aim for the betterment of downtown.
At one point, downtown was the city center and was vibrant and booming. This is just one of the efforts, one of the many efforts, in trying to get back to that place once again.
The group also hopes to awaken a greater food culture in the region.
If you can't do food in the valley here with all the food we have, I don't know where you could do it. So hopefully it's just people starting to think about where their food comes from.
That was Andy Hansen-Smith, the board chair for Creative Fresno. Steve Skibby, a local photographer who's been to almost every Cart Hop event, says he believes Cart Hop is changing the way the community views food.
I think there's a change in how people are accessing their food or what they're expecting. I think that they're coming to these things. These are gourmet trucks. These aren't just standard food trucks. And so the food is locally grown, locally prepared. So it's not fast food, even though it comes out of a truck. And I think it changes people's perception of food.
Sarah Pomer, the City of Fresno's grant writer, stopped by Cart Hop at Eaton Plaza for lunch. She ordered a short rib burrito.
I think it's a great idea. It's a great way to get people that work downtown to come out and explore something different.
In the coming weeks, Cart Hop will feature a weekly local ingredient that each vendor will make use of in their fare. Think seasonal, and with spring around the corner, expect leafy greens and maybe an early batch of strawberries. The group hopes that within a year, a fourth and possible fifth stop could be added to the weekly foodie routine, and that in 10 years, food trucks will be part of the everyday hustle of a booming downtown. But for now, Cart Hop will gather from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. every Tuesday in North Fresno at River Park Village Courtyard East, Thursdays on the Fulton Mall, and Fridays at Eaton Plaza. For Valley Public Radio, I'm Ezra Romero.
Thank you.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Kaiser Permanente Fresno.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. We continue our conversation about downtown Fresno and wanting to see how those who are outside our region view the efforts here to revitalize the city's core, what's working in other cities. Now, joining us now is Charles Brinbaum, the founder and president of the Cultural Landscape Foundation in Washington, D.C. He's also a fellow of the American Society of Landscape Architects and the American Academy in Rome. Thank you so much for joining us. We also have Kate Border. She's the president and CEO for the Downtown Fresno Partnership. And she came to us from Milwaukee, where she was instrumental in developing projects to boost downtown. We also have Keith Woodruck, professor of geography at Fresno State. So I'm really looking forward. Thank you all for joining us. I'd just like to pick up on our last conversation. And I know, Mr. Brinbaum, you may not have had the opportunity to hear that. We were discussing, though, with a prior group of opening the Fulton Mall to traffic. So before we get started, I'd like to hear the opinions of Professor Woodcock and also you, Kate Borders, just your view on the situation we have with that. We know that it has great historical value, the Fulton Mall does, but, you know, some people would argue if people aren't coming, then, you know, what value is it? Right. And maybe it can't be determined. We can't measure it by that. So let's get your opinion on that, starting with Professor Woodcock.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think that you need to take a look historically that what is the role not just of Fresno in the larger economy in the Central Valley, but also what is the role of downtown within the how Fresno works. I see downtown Fresno as being a vital link to the rest of the economy. It can't be competitive or do the same things that like Fashion Fair, or Sierra Vista Mall, or River Park does. So it needs to take a look at its own niche as to what is the entertainment, how do we attract people downtown, what is the relationship between traffic, parking, and land use. And I think the discussion on seeing where downtown fits into that will help drive the discussion as to whether the reintroduction of traffic to downtown will play a role.
Kay?
I couldn't agree with you more. We, the property owners, because I represent the property owners of downtown Fresno, don't ever believe that we will be a river park or a fashion fair. The idea behind where downtown should be is that very unique environment. You know, when you go to other downtowns, you see boutique shopping, you see small entrepreneurial spirit alive and well, and that's what we're hoping to have in downtown. We certainly don't want Gap or Banana Republic in our downtown, and we don't expect that will come. I really see downtown as the items that matter so much are these beautiful historic buildings. The art collection that is in downtown right now, and it's not just on the Fulton Mall. We have an amazing art collection throughout downtown, is very, very valuable, and it needs to be honored in a manner that's commensurate with the value of those pieces. And to me, the architecture of the mall itself that came into play in 1964, and possibly one could argue that the historic significance of downtown was prior to that, that the time that we should honor was when we had a traditional Main Street, when people were passing through those beautiful buildings. And now we've got this great spot downtown that people just aren't visiting. And we need to transition that to a vibrant core where people will come regularly and respect the art and see these beautiful buildings, and a process that will give economic vitality to the space so that the landlords and the property owners can have the rent that they should have. The vacancies will go down, and they'll be able to put that money back into these buildings.
Mr. Birnbaum, you came to Fresno in 2010. You visited the Fulton Mall. You also included your findings in an article that you wrote for the Huffington Post on pedestrian malls. And tell us again, you know, in reading your article, it was, you know, you have this great historic place, but also that it was in disarray and hadn't been well kept. But how do we as a city kind of combine what we have and really look at making it more economically viable?
Well, I think very often what happens in situations like Fresno and the Fulton Mall is that we look at these things as either ors. We have to open the mall or keep it closed. The preservationists, for example, the traditional preservationists, I think, have drawn a very hard line about wanting to keep the whole thing closed. During my time, when I was in town in 2010, I was very intrigued to learn so much from the economists who were on the team, and it made me realize that you know, that it's not black and white, that you can, in fact, open sections of the mall without destroying its integrity. A couple of foundational points here. First of all, the mall has already been determined eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places, and that actually fits within a national trend that's exploding across America right now, which is an interest in modernism and landscapes. The city of Seattle and the city of Minneapolis, both in the last couple of months, have designated post-war designs actually from the 1970s. The city of Portland is not too far behind with its chain of open spaces by Lawrence Halprin, and another Garrett Ekbo project, which was at risk, is also now going through the process in Tucson, Arizona. So we're seeing a national trend to embrace modernist heritage. It was interesting to me also that this conversation is following the conversation on food culture. And, you know, when you look at the other downtown malls that are successful in places like Boulder and Burlington and Charlottesville, Virginia, these places also have very strong food culture communities in their basket of landscape that surrounds them. And what we're seeing is very heavily programmed activities in those malls. And, you know, that to me from the week that I spent in Fresno when I was there last time is there wasn't a lot of programming going on downtown. And so, in fact, if you make there a reason for people to come, they will.
You also talked about in your article and, you know, your findings that you feel there is a way to develop the Fulton Mall, but also keep the historic value. And you really talked about opening it in phases.
That's right. I mean, I do think that, you know, it's interesting. Since I've been to Fresno, to Fresno, one of the things that happened since then is that the Lincoln Road in Miami, which is like the Fulton Mall, six blocks long, there was, like their downtown, it closed, and then there was a section that they opened to pedestrian traffic in the 1980s. It was completely overhauled. And then in 2011, that block was closed again and designed by a landscape architect named Raymond Jungles with the architects Herzog and DeMuren, who have built a new garage building. And this project has been internationally celebrated in terms of its architecture and landscape. So here was a block that had been open for the reasons that many people say in terms of the merchants and needing parking, and now it's been closed again. So Juanita, to go back to your question, I do think that you can open sections of the mall and we can learn from that incrementally. In terms of the Fulton Mall itself, I do think that the two end blocks, both between Curd and Inyo and Merced and Tuolumne, both can be reopened in a way that is done sympathetically where the two signature fountains are preserved on the ends. The building envelopes have been largely severed. The setbacks have been altered, and it would be very interesting to see those edges reimagined, especially on the end going back towards Stanislaus, where the neighborhood and that redevelopment is moving in that direction. That, to me, is kind of a no-brainer. I think the other thing that can happen, like it happened in Charlottesville, is some of the cross streets should be opened. And there'll have to be some sympathetic solutions here. In particular, I think the Mariposa Central Spine should be reopened. I also think the blocks on Kern and Merced between Van Ness and Broadway, and also between the Fulton Mall and the stadium, should be explored for reopening as well. And this way, you keep the four central spines intact. And I think what's happened really in the debate is that, as I mentioned earlier, the preservationists have been sort of fairly drawing a very strong line that all of these blocks need to be closed to traffic, whereas other folks are saying the whole thing needs to be reopened. I want to bring one other point into this equation, and for me it was a real aha moment when I came to Fresno. Being trained as a landscape architect and being incredibly familiar with ECBO's work, you know, I was excited to come and see the mall. But what I wasn't prepared for, because it hasn't been written about in scholarship, is that the role of the Downtown Mall Art Selection Committee and the role that they historically played, that this was funded by private citizens with the goal of creating an outdoor museum of art. And I don't know of another American city that attempted something like this during the modern era. And if you begin to change those relationships, you pick up the art and you move it, if you have parking bays nested between art installations, you change the character of what that is. And look at how many sculpture gardens have been built all across America since this time. And here in Fresno was really one of the first such expressions of such civic gestures, working mostly with local and regional artists.
Thank you. I'd like to, our two guests, and hearing his comments, how do you think we can take some of what he's talking about and really make it work here? Because right now we have, you know, the discussion going of we need to open the mall for economic reasons, or, well, we need to keep it as it is. How do we mesh those two? I mean, these are some really great ideas as far as what he's put forth, but I think you also have to kind of look at the reality of where we are in Fresno.
Well, I think that when we take a look at the length of the mall being six blocks long, To be truly pedestrian, you need to have it at a human scale. So it's 6 blocks long, really at a human scale. And it is one end, really, how does it relate to the other end? And so I think that you get spread out and kind of jumbled on that. So I think some strategic looking at ways to introduce traffic, but still having keeping the pedestrian core, because it's really the pedestrians that are going to be adding the life to the downtown. So if you just add cars back there without taking a look at back again, what is that link between traffic, parking, and land use? Then just reopening it doesn't gain you anything.
And Kate, you have planned a number of the projects that we've had downtown that have really gotten people to come. What do you hear from them as far as their view about parking and what would get them to spend more time?
Well, the complaints that we hear most often from our visitors to downtown, as well as businesses and property owners, are all centered around parking. It is the biggest challenge that we face in downtown because California, you know, people often show me pictures of beautiful pedestrian spaces in Europe. And California is just not Europe. I love going to Europe and I love being on the big, open, you know, grand pedestrian spaces that you'll find in Spain and Italy, and they're magnificent, and I would never argue that. But Europe is much more pedestrian and bike-centered than we are here in California. We definitely are much more attached to our vehicles. And so that has to be accommodated. People want to – I mean, there are so many reasons that just logistically cars are easier for people in our current, you know, situation. I mean, imagine trying to drop off an elderly parent at a restaurant – and then you have to be 6 blocks away before you can – it's just not – you're not going to go there. You're not going to select that destination. People also aren't able to – they're not able to see what's happening in a space. They want to go visit a restaurant or a venue, and they want to drive by and make sure that it's open. You know, those types of just logistics. Google mapping. Our pedestrian mall is not linked right now to those types of – you know, people are mobile right now. They look at their phone. And one of the things that he just mentioned was the connection to programming. And we've been doing a considerable amount of programming focused on the mall. And our goal has always been to bring more people to downtown and to showcase what is there, because there are some assets and some jewels in downtown. And it's very, very costly. So in order to program that to the extent that would be necessary to turn this ship around, it would be, you know, a multi-million-dollar project, and I just don't see that funding.
Well, you know what? We're just getting started with this conversation, but we are going to have to wrap. I'd love to spend more time with you, Mr. Birnbaum, and I think we're going to have you back. I hope you'll come back, and all of you again, because this will be a continued discussion. But we're just out of time right now, so I'd like to thank all of you for coming, Kate Borders, Keith Woodock, and thank you for joining us, Mr. Birnbaum. We love your comments, and we love the fact that you took time to come here and visit our mall and came up with some great recommendations. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. I just want to say in closing that when Morris Lapidus looked at his design for Lincoln Road, he noted he designed it for people. A car never bought anything.
To be continued. You're right. And it's just whether or not we as a city, I think, really look at historically what it is and what we might want to gain from that. So, again, thank you all for this conversation.
Yeah. Just one last closing comment in talking about, does the downtown matter? All great cities are multi-level, not only spatially but culturally, and I think Fresno really can be a great city.
I agree.
Okay, thank you all. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. Our next guest may be familiar to many of you. Nikiko Masumoto is a writer and a farmer. You could say she's just like her dad, Mas Masumoto. After graduating college, Nikiko returned to Fresno, where she started the Valley's Storytellers Project. She has also developed a one-woman show called What We Could Carry, and that's what we're going to talk about in our few remaining moments. Tell me, first of all, why did you develop this one-woman show, and tell us a little bit more about the story there.
Absolutely. Well, What We Could Carry is the project I started in graduate school. It's an hour show that's devoted to exploring Japanese-American memory. And it really came from really dreams. I was haunted in a beautiful way by the ghosts of my ancestors, by the stories of my grandparents, and I really needed to explore what it meant to be Japanese-American and carry the memory of racism during World War II and after.
And I think that the fact when just to hear you say that, and the fact that you have those memories, you have those stories from your grandparents that a lot of young people don't.
Yes.
And to be able to capture that and pass it along, because when you think about what happened during the internment, you know, that wasn't so long ago.
Absolutely.
And to remind people what it was like for so many people now who you know, still live here.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's still a lot of healing that needs to happen, even for those of us. I'm a Yonsei, fourth generation, and I was born long after the war, but the memories and the influences of that time period have been stark and really deep in my life.
And in your one-woman show, what is it, your performance, what is it that you really want people to hear?
The performance itself is composed of 13 voices. I took testimony from the redress hearings in the 1980s, and I edited them down. So these are real people's stories. And one of the things is the diversity of experiences. It's just striking, and it's really amazing to me to take those stories and let them literally live in my body as I perform them. And so what I'm hoping is that people go away with a real emotional intelligence about internment, about racism, and about the Japanese-American community.
And, you know, and it's so close to home because those internment camps were right here in California.
Oh, absolutely. And my grandparents and a lot of people in our community were held at the Fresno Fairgrounds before going to camp.
And that's a part of history. And I think for a lot of people, just to think about that, and as far as, you know, as a nation, you know, what we did. And I think for a lot of people, you know, if you're African-American, you think about your ancestors and slavery. And I think so many people don't want to think about it. They really want to move past that. But I think you have to remember that part of your history. Is that part of, you know, why you do what you do, is the fact that people need to remember that part of our history?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the characters, one of the people who I closed the piece with, Bill Shinkai, in his testimony, he closed by saying, people talk about getting let out of camp in 45, 44, 1943. Well, I don't think I ever did get out of camp. I think I'm beginning to get out of camp now.
And that's the whole point that I know you hear this a lot with whatever, you know, adversity someone may have gone through or one group may have gone through. You hear the, well, you know, just get over it, just get past it. And I don't think people, unless it's something you've gone through, know what that does to a person, especially people who consider themselves to be American.
Absolutely. And I think that the lesson is that healing is an ongoing process.
You said that for yourself, that you took the testimony of these individuals.
Yeah.
And did you, you know, what was that like for you?
So the testimony is from the redress hearings in the 1981, a congressional commission was formed. And so I got this big archive of 152 testimony from the Los Angeles hearings. And it was just riveting. I mean, reading those testimony, I feel like my soul cracked open a little bit more.
You know, I can remember, I think it was when you talk about that, those hearings. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about this, but I think, you know, Fresno State had a program to honor some of those people, and they came down and they told their stories. And I can remember there being there as a news reporter, how it just mesmerized me, and you were just captured in what they were saying. So, you know, it's so important. Does it change you in a way when you do this?
Absolutely.
Because you just kind of take on what their burden.
Absolutely. I feel it's part of my calling as a Yonsei, as a Japanese American, that I need to carry these stories in my body and make them alive through performance.
Well, tell us a little bit about the One Woman program and when you will be presenting it and when people can see it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have an upcoming performance this Sunday, February 17th at Pardini's. It's at the Japanese American Citizens League annual Day of Remembrance luncheon. And so if people want to go, it's open to the public. It's $35 for lunch, and it's the doors open at noon, lunch at 1. And they can contact Marcia Chung. Her phone number is 273-0397. And then I'm also performing the following Sunday in Berkeley at the Berkeley Methodist United Church for free at their normal Day of Remembrance service at 10:30 a.m. That's in Berkeley. And so I'm hoping to also have some other performances coming up. In April, I'll be performing at Willow International Community College. And so I try to post all of these things on – I have a blog. It's whatwecouldcarry.wordpress.com.
Okay. Well, we're so glad that you're here.
And
we'll continue to follow you and to watch you. I think you're just going to have a great presence here in Fresno. And thanks for coming back.
Thank you so much, Juanita.
Nikiko Matsumoto and her one-woman show, What We Could Carry. Well, we've had a great discussion here today on Valley Edition. Lots more to talk about, but we thank you for joining us today. That is it for us. Now, you can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kvpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions, and you can also email us at talk@kvpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation and the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.